My heart is so heavy and burdened down with grief. This valley's so low, the mountains it's so steep. There's a brighter day coming, and soon I'll reach the top. For Jesus walks ahead of me, moves all stumbling blocks. Jesus walks ahead of me, He makes my path straight. He leads me through the valley and listens when I pray. If I ask Him in faith, believing, He'll take care of all my needs. Oh, Satan cannot harm me, for Jesus walks ahead of me. Every step that I take, He's just one step ahead. Every mountain that I climb, my footsteps He has led. Soon this journey will be ended, from heartache I'll be set free. No more disappointments, for Jesus walks ahead of me. Jesus walks ahead of me, He makes my path straight. He leads me through the valley and listens when I pray. If I ask Him in faith, believing, He'll take care of all my needs. Oh, Satan cannot harm me, for Jesus walks ahead of me. Oh, Satan cannot harm me, for Jesus walks ahead of me.
The table is set. The dealer is at the center. The seated players are dressed in tuxedos. On one side, the evil genius with a patch over one eye. On the other side, the suave secret agent with a gadget for every occasion. And the first battle between these two blockbuster movie titans will, of course, be a game of poker. Have you ever noticed that all of the dramatic scenes concerning a poker game that you see in the movies, and especially the old westerns, is when somebody goes all in and they put all their chips on the table? Some of you, I'm sure, have probably played the popular game known as Texas Hold'em. So you're, in all probability, familiar with the term all in. I played a little five-card draw back nearly 50 years ago. I had a limit. If I lost $5, I quit. So I wasn't much of a player, and I didn't lose much. But I have played a little bit in my time. At any time in the game, in Texas Hold'em, I'm told, I don't know that I've ever played Texas Hold'em, but I'm told that a player can decide to put all his chips on the table. He bets his entire stack, everything that he has to offer, he puts it on the table. Win or lose, it's out there. When a player does that, he's saying to all of the other partners, I'm betting everything I have. I'm committing all that I've got. If you've ever heard of the term bet the ranch, that came from what would happen sometimes in the Old West. gamblers would come in and bet hand after hand, and if they really felt like they had a shot at the big pot, they'd literally put the deed to the ranch on the table and bet the ranch that they had a winning hand. Back in that day, you could literally take a piece of paper, sign your own handmade promissory note, and bet everything that you had on that particular hand. Today, it's known as going all in. Now, for those of you who like challenges, you're going to love this series, or I hope you do. We're calling it All In. We're going to be giving you the same challenge that Jesus gave to his disciples 2,000 years ago to go all in to following him. To go all in is being committed to Christ and to follow Christ through his church. To go all in is giving him everything that you have so that in return, he can give you the biggest reward and the biggest return on the life that you're investing in. I'll tell you up front, it's not easy. Think about the most nervous moment of your entire life. Maybe it was a time you had to speak in front of a group of people. They say that's the number one fear of people. Death comes in second. Or perhaps it was right before a big test or maybe a job interview and you were so nervous. Maybe you get nervous before flying on a plane. For many adults, however, their most nervous moment is something that many of us have experienced. It's that moment standing at the back of the church, decorated with flowers, friends and family seated and waiting. You may remember pacing back and forth, sweating bullets and hyperventilating. You were about to get married. You were making a covenant before God that would be until death do us part. And despite the fact that many marriages do end in divorce, I'd like to think, wouldn't you, that most couples on their wedding day are nervous because they're thinking, I have to live with this person, for better or worse, for the rest of my life. Heard about a fellow that was getting married. He was standing before the pastor, taking his vows, and the pastor said, will you take this woman for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health? He thought it was multiple choice. And so he said, I'll take better, richer, and health. Well, as you know, that's not the way it works in marriage. In marriage, it is all in when it's good and when it's bad, when you're happy and when you're not. It's till death do you part. Jesus demands no less. What Jesus is looking for and what churches are looking for too often are completely different. Too many churches are looking for decisions. Jesus is looking for disciples. One of the greatest problems we have in our churches is that we've got too many people who have made decisions and too few people who have become true disciples. One Bible scholar put it like this. It is possible to claim to be a follower of Jesus without being a disciple, to be a camp follower without being a soldier of the King, to be a hanger-on in some great work without pulling one's weight. Someone was once talking to a great scholar about a man who supposedly had talked about being in his class, being one of his students. He said, so-and-so tells me that he was one of your students. The teacher answered quite devastatingly, he may have attended my lectures, but he was not one of my students. Folks, there's a world of difference between attending a lecture and being a student. It is one of the supreme handicaps, I believe today, of our church. And when I talk about our church, I'm talking about all of our churches. There's only one church the Bible speaks of, but there are many expressions of that one church. And the biggest problem our churches have is that there are so many distant followers of Jesus and so few real disciples. Let me put it another way. I am afraid we have people who are regularly exposed to small doses of watered-down religion, who have become inoculated against genuine, true Christianity. That's what happens when you get a vaccine, you know. You get just a small dose of the actual sickness, actual germ, so that when you're exposed to it later, you don't get sick because you've already been inoculated. I think a lot of people mistake Christianity for this watered-down version and then say, no thanks, I'm not interested. What I want us to learn, attempt to learn, to try to learn, to begin to learn today from Jesus is very simple. Jesus Christ is not looking for weekend warriors. You know, those who come once a month to the National Guard meeting. That's fine for National Guard members, but not for Christian warriors. Jesus is looking for full-time spiritual Marines. My Bible's open to Luke chapter 9. And here Jesus tells us of one of the strongest challenges he ever gave to anyone and what it means to be all in. As we begin to look at this theme, I want you to keep something in mind. When God sent Jesus Christ to this world, he went all in. When Jesus went all the way to the cross to die for our sins, he went all the way to the cross to die for our sins. He went all in. The wholehearted Lord is not interested in half-hearted followers. He's looking for people who are all in. He's asking us every single day to bet the ranch on him and to cash all our chips on him. The only way to do that is to look in the mirror and do three things. Here's the first. Deny yourself. Luke 9, verse 23. Every time I read these words, if anyone would come after me. Now, the verse says, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily and follow me. Every time I see those two words, it says, if anyone. First two words of the verse, Luke 9, 23. If anyone. Now, I would have thought Jesus would have said, since everyone would come after me, I would think that if there is one person who has ever set foot on this planet that everybody would want to follow, it would be Jesus. If anyone, I still find it quite incredible that not everyone then or everyone now wants to become a follower of Christ. It's hard for me to get over the reality that most people will refuse to follow Jesus. You've got to give Jesus credit for one thing. He is pro-choice. Now, not in the area of abortion. He's pro-life. But he is pro-choice in that he only wants people to follow him who want to follow him. He's not going to force you to follow him. He's not going to coerce you to follow him. He will bless you if you will follow him, but he won't make you follow him. You've got to decide on your own that you want to follow him. If anyone would come after me, that also tells me that I have the right to stand up anytime, anywhere, and say to anybody, if you want to follow Christ, you can follow Christ. He will accept anybody, anytime, any place, under any circumstances that wants to become a follower of his. Isn't that good news? Not everybody will become a follower of Jesus, but Jesus will accept anybody if they want to become a follower. You know, I've never met a person who wants to be a follower of Jesus but can't be. I never have. I've never had anybody say to me, I just can't follow him. I want to be, but I can't. He won't let me. Never happens, never going to happen. He said, if anyone, but I've met plenty of people who could become followers but won't be. Yet I think Jesus also gives us the answer as to why many people don't want to become a follower. Because you see, in order to follow Jesus, he goes on to say, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself. Now, folks, this is where discipleship really gets demanding. Because you see, Jesus being up front and being honest says, there is a cost to following me. You've got to deny the hardest thing to deny, which is yourself. Now, it's easy to deny things. It's easy to deny pleasures. It's easy to deny other people. But it goes against our very grain to deny ourselves, doesn't it? Let me clarify something. Denying self is not the same as self-denial. Everybody practices self-denial when you give up something for, or give up an activity, let's say, or you even give up some food for a certain season. But to deny self, we cash everything in when we surrender all that we have and all that we are and all that we could be and all that we could get and all that we could ever become just to follow Jesus. There's a difference. Wouldn't you agree? Especially here in the good old U.S. of A., the wealthiest, most materialistic society on earth. It goes against the grain of everything we're taught, everything we see, everything we hear from every advertisement on the radio, television, internet. It's the culture itself, isn't it? Rather than deny ourselves, we are taught to deify ourselves. We become our own little idols. We want ourselves to be glorified, edified, promoted, advertised, exalted, eulogized, admired, and esteemed. Now we do. I'm going to make a very candid confession to you today. I'm going to name publicly for the first time the church, the one church member at Highland. I can't speak for any other church, but the one church member at Highland that gives me the most trouble. All right, is everybody awake? All ears open. This church member is my biggest headache. Now, I really hate to call his name out loud because I really like this guy. He's one of the best people I know. I love being around the guy. And if you ever got around him, got to know him, you'd love him too. In fact, I can never get away from this guy because the church member that gives me the most trouble is me. I have to constantly tell myself to get out of the way so Jesus can have his way. How many of us are honest enough to say that we will serve Jesus, obey Jesus, and honor Jesus just as long as we don't have to pay too much, go too far, or leave our comfort zone? Come on now, be honest today. Jesus said, if you are going to follow me, step one is deny yourself. That means you have to put Jesus before you, above you, ahead of you, and instead of you. You've got to get your life to the point where it is all of Jesus and none of you. Now, that's hard enough. But then Jesus ratchets it up another level. He's always raising the bar on us, isn't he? Because the second step to following Jesus is die to yourself. Let's read the verse again. If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily. Now that doesn't translate very well to us today. You have to remember that the cross was a symbol of death. Today, Jesus would have said something like, take up the electric chair. When he said, take up the cross in his day, today it would be like the electric chair. Or take up the gas chamber. Or take up the lethal injection. Symbols of death. If you ever saw anybody carrying a cross, that meant they were going to die. You would see them go down the road carrying the cross, but you would not see them come back. When you take up the cross in your life, it means you are having a funeral. You put yourself, your ego, your desires, your wants, your ambitions, and you put it in a casket. You close the top and you bury it. If you're going to follow Jesus, you've got to have your own personal Gethsemane. You've got to go to your own personal cross. And you've got to die to yourself. Before you think that's too high of a price to pay, let me remind you that all Jesus is asking of us is to do for him what he has already done for us. Just before he uttered these words, he said this in verses 21 through 22 of Luke 9, and he strictly charged and commanded them to tell this to no one, saying, the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and on the third day be raised. Simply put, Jesus died for us, and now he asks us to die for him or with him. He cannot die. We cannot die for him like he died for us, but we can die to ourselves so that we can live for him. This is exactly what Jesus meant in verse 24. For whoever would save his life, Luke 9:24, for whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. You see, it all comes down to two choices, folks. You can either keep your life for yourself and eventually lose it, or you can lose your life to Jesus and eternally keep it. It's been a few years ago now, there was a newspaper article that is probably among the saddest stories ever written. It seems there were some Siamese twins who were joined together at the neck all the way down. The doctor came to the parents of these twins and said, if you do not allow me to perform surgery, very quickly both of these twins are going to die. The parents said, well, you obviously have our permission. Begin immediately. He said, you don't understand. It is not that simple. I can save one, but I can't save the other. I can save either, but I can't save both. What I'm telling you, Mom and Dad, is this. The two of you must make a decision on which one is going to live and which one is going to die. In effect, Jesus says you've got to make a similar choice today, my friend. If Jesus is going to live in you, you must die to you. Your heart is like a throne, and either you're on the throne or Jesus is on the throne. One preacher put it this way. In every man's life, there is a throne. When self is on the throne, Christ is on the cross. When Christ is on the throne, self is on the cross. There's a great lesson here for everyone who is married or is thinking about getting married. If you're not yet married, but one day you hope to be, before you do, you and the person you're marrying had better have two funerals. You had better die to yourself, and that other person had better die to themselves. Because if you don't, and you live for yourself, you will have conflict. And I know what you're thinking, but preacher, if I die to myself, I'm willing to lose everything for Christ. That is exactly right. I haven't seen the movie Act of Valor. It came out a few years ago. It's about Navy SEALs. It actually stars, if I remember correctly, real Navy SEALs. But I was reading about a scene in it which one of the SEALs is about to leave his wife, a newborn baby, to go to war. And the commanding officer is asking this soldier if he's really ready to make this kind of sacrifice, to which the soldier replies, if you haven't given up everything, you've already lost. You know, Jesus said, is it only when you have given up everything for him that you're really ready to gain everything for him? It is only when you deny yourself and die to yourself that you're ready to take the last step of following Jesus. And that third step is devote yourself. If anyone would come after me, Luke 9:23 says, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. The word follow is an interesting word. It comes from a prefix which means like or same. Now, it's attached to a word that means way. It literally means, when you're using the word follow, it literally means to walk in the same way or to take the same road. The idea is not just following behind someone as they walk further ahead, but to walk beside someone as you go in the same direction. To follow someone meant then that you submit totally to the authority of the other person. You give up all of your rights, you give up all of your freedom, you give up all of your desires, all of your wants, all of your ambitions, and surrender to that person that you're following. The only way you are ever all in with Jesus is when you are completely surrendered. Now, surrender is an unpopular word. Surrender implies losing, and nobody wants to be a loser. When you think about surrender, you think about being defeated in a battle. You think about having to give up to someone that is stronger than you are, or having to forfeit a game. The words are almost used in a negative context, aren't they? Our culture teaches just the opposite. You never give up. You never give in. Winning is everything, and surrendering is absolutely unthinkable. Yet Jesus amazingly says, the only way to victory for the Christian is to surrender. Douglas MacArthur, the great military commander, once said, in war, there is no substitute for victory. If I can paraphrase that, Jesus is saying, in life, there is no substitute for surrender. I've told you many times before that Jesus was always about the bottom line. It's an accountant term, actually, and the accountant is always about the bottom line. In a former lifetime, I was a banker, I like to say, and we were concerned about the bottom line. You're either going to waste your life, and here is the bottom line, spiritually speaking. You're either going to waste your life trying to hold on to it, or you're going to invest your life by surrendering your life to Christ. If you try to hold on to it, you're going to lose it. But if you lose it for Jesus, you'll gain it. Jim Elliot, the great missionary who died trying to take the gospel to the Aka Indians in South America, famously said, quote, he is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. Here's what's at stake, folks. For what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul or forfeits himself? Everybody's going to go all in, always, in one or two things, either the world or Jesus. Jesus says, you are foolish to try to hold on to what you're never going to keep. One of my favorite people is country western singer, performer Dolly Parton. I'm told she's a sweet lady and a very down-to-earth lady. I think everybody can tell that by watching and listening to her. Dolly Parton once said, if I see something sagging, dragging, or bagging, I get it sucked, tucked, or plucked. It takes a lot of money to look as cheap as I do. You know what, folks? You can get it sucked, tucked, and plucked, but eventually it's all going to sag, drag, and bag. What you're trying to keep, you will eventually lose. But what you lose to Jesus, you will eternally keep. So ask yourself the hard question today. Are you all in? Have you bet the ranch on Jesus? Let's get specific. When it comes to your church, are you all in? When it comes to your marriage, are you all in? When it comes to your money, are you all in? When it comes to living the single life, a life of purity, are you all in? Are you? You may remember when you were in school and you studied your history about the explorer, Hernando Cortez. He was from Spain, you might recall, and in 1519 he came to Mexico and landed at Veracruz. He had been given orders to conquer the land and to build a colony. When all of his men were off the boats, he did something in which he's been remembered for over 500 years. He burned all his boats. That's right. He looked at his men and said, we will either win this victory or we will die, but we're not going back. You know what he did? He bet the ranch. He was all in. There's only one way to follow Jesus, folks. That's to burn the boats, bet the ranch, and go all in. He would want me to remind you of that today. Until next Lord's Day, remember, keep looking to Jesus.